President Zelensky, as a country with a long history of migration of our own, as a people that at times in our history have known conflict and have sought refuge and opportunity abroad, as a people who have seen peace come and our country transformed, know that for as long as Ukraine needs our help and support, Ireland will be there for you. Your struggle is our struggle. Your success will be our success. We are with you for as long as it takes. Mr. President, Volodymyr, you and the First Lady are most welcome to Ireland. We will continue to do all we can to support a just and lasting peace for Ukraine. I've always been clear that nothing can be decided about Ukraine without the involvement of Ukraine, and we will be with you when peace prevails to support the recovery and reconstruction of your country. Thank you, and Slava Ukraini.
This is my video update on this Tuesday afternoon, December the 2nd, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with Zelensky in Ireland and Witkoff in Ireland. And perhaps, according to some rumors, Zelensky in Kiev. Witkoff is on his way to Moscow, but him and Jared Kushner, they made a stop in Ireland. I believe Kushner is flying with Witkoff from to Ireland and then from Ireland to Moscow. But Witkoff is definitely in Ireland. And just by coincidence, Zelensky showed up in Ireland as well. By the way, Zelensky also got 150 million euros given to him by the Irish government. Talk about flushing 150 million euros down the golden toilet. There you go. Zelensky shows up in Ireland and he gets 150 million euros given to him by the Irish government. But there are no reports which say that Witkoff had a meeting with Zelensky. But come on, Witkoff is in Ireland, Zelensky is in Ireland. They must have coordinated this, and they must have had a meeting right before Witkoff goes to Moscow, which according to reports say that Witkoff will officially present Trump's peace plan to the Russian Federation, to Russian President Vladimir Putin. So I wonder what Witkoff told Zelensky. I wonder what Zelensky told Witkoff, or tried to convince Witkoff of, right? Don't believe the reports that we're losing, Mr. Witkoff. We are actually winning. I'm sure that's what Zelensky told Witkoff. I wouldn't be surprised if Witkoff told Zelensky, it's over, man. It is over, you have to go. But the rumors that Zelensky is in Kiev, and these are just rumors, I have not been able to confirm this, but that would be interesting if Zelensky happened to show up in Kiev right at this very moment when Zelensky is in Ireland. Witkoff is most likely meeting with Zelensky, probably going to give Zelensky an ultimatum that he has to go, and then he's going to make his way over to Moscow to officially discuss Trump's peace plan. Zelensky being the MI6, in my opinion, he would be the MI6 British choice to replace Zelensky and to keep the conflict going, because Zelensky replacing Zelensky would mean that the conflict would continue. And instead of a clown puppet comedian as president, you would have a failed military commander who allegedly masterminded the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline, leading Ukraine. At least that is what the MI6 and the UK appears to be angling for. Zelensky to replace Zelensky and to keep the conflict and the grift going. So Putin, he visited the front line in November, on November 30th, actually. But we got the reports today that Putin was indeed at the front, meeting with Gerasimov and other Russian military commanders. And it is now confirmed, according to the Russian Ministry of Defense, Gerasimov and the Russian president, that Pokrovsk has been captured by Russia, that Mirnograd is encircled, effectively captured by Russia, but what you have in Mirnograd is a cauldron. And Volchansk in the Kharkov region has also been captured by the Russian military. Significant announcement in the region of Kharkov. And you also have the news that Huliapole is about to be captured, given another week or two. And it looks like Huliapole in the south, in the Zaporozhye region, will be captured by Russia. Even Putin said that the Russian advance in Huliapole is moving very fast. So some significant developments on the ground, confirmed by the Russian president, by Gerasimov. Take it to the bank. Russia has notched a significant military victory, a bunch of significant military victories in the conflict in Ukraine, completely debunking Zelensky's claims, which he still holds on to. Zelensky's claims that there's 300 Russian soldiers trapped in Pokrovsk and there's 60 Russian soldiers trapped in Kupiansk. CNN is having a hard time admitting to the Russian battlefield victories. CNN ran an article with the title, "Russia claims to have captured key city of Pokrovsk as Ukraine dismisses Moscow's loud statements ahead of Witkov talks." CNN says the claim by Moscow, which CNN is unable to independently verify, comes after months of heavy fighting for control of the strategic hub. Moscow has sustained thousands of dead and injured in its assault on the city. Right, Russia has sustained casualties and losses in Pokrovsk, not Ukraine. Moscow has. At least they admit, you got to give CNN credit. At least they, some credit. At least they admit that it's a strategic hub, right? They didn't say an insignificant, not a non-strategic, the non-strategic area of Pokrovsk, the insignificant city of Pokrovsk. At least they admit that it's a strategic hub. So give CNN at least credit for that, even though they claim that they cannot verify what the Russian president says is true, what the Russian military says is true, what all of the independent reporting and images and video and Telegram channels and even Ukraine Telegram channels, mapping channels admit is true. And we've known about for the past 1 to 2 weeks, which is that Russia controls Pokrovsk, controls Mirnograd, has Ukraine surrounded in Mirnograd, is about to capture Huliapole. And the only piece of news which may be new with regards to what's happening on the front lines is the announcement of Volchansk in the Kharkov region, which has been captured by the Russian military. So that's CNN. Putin, during this meeting, he referred to the Zelensky regime as a junta. That's very revealing. He is saying that the Zelensky regime is a junta. He's called them a criminal gang. Now he's calling them a junta. Russia has also said that, Putin has also said that it's impossible to sign any kind of agreement with an illegitimate regime like the Zelensky regime. So the statements from Russia are crystal clear. Before there's any deal to be made with the United States, Zelensky and his producers and scriptwriters, they have to go. Putin also said that he gave directives, orders to the military to create the buffer zone, a larger buffer zone in the north, in the Kharkov region, in the Sumy region. So perhaps it's Putin's way of saying that Sumy, Kharkov, and these regions are next to be captured by the Russian military. So there are MPs in Ukraine, in the parliament, who are also saying that Zelensky has to go. There are some political analysts in Kiev who claim that the Green Goblin will be forced to step down by the middle of December, at the latest, January 1st. That's when Zelensky will make his exit. But you do have quite a number of members of parliament in Kiev who are now saying that it is time for Zelensky to exit. The corruption scandal, the golden toilet flushed Zelensky. The golden toilet flushed Zelensky. $100 million corruption scandal. So we have a deal between Norway and Ukraine. This was announced by my precious Schmeagle, my precious Schmeagle, who announced he's the defense secretary now, isn't he? He used to be the prime minister. Now I believe he's the defense secretary, my precious Schmeagle. And he announced a drone cooperation facility, manufacturing facility with Norway. He made that announcement on X. And it looks like Ukraine and Norway, they are going to start making drones. Schmeagle did not say where this facility would be located, if it would be located in Ukraine or if it would be located in Norway. But Ukraine and Norway, they've decided to create a joint venture to manufacture drones. Ukraine and Norway will jointly produce Ukrainian drones. I signed the corresponding document with Norway's Minister of Defense, Tore O Sadvik, Schmeagle wrote on X. This is how you onshore the money that you gave to Ukraine. This would be my guess, right? How do you get that money that you gave to Ukraine? How do you get it to Ukraine and then bring it back to your country while you create these joint ventures, right? That's one way you do it. So it looks like the stealing of Russian frozen assets is not going to happen. At least that's how it looks. And boy was Ursula. Boy were the kleptocrats in Brussels trying really, really hard to get those frozen assets. Getting the frozen assets. We have an audience. Welcome pigeons to the news of the day. Anyway, we always said that getting those frozen assets for the European Union, for the kleptocrats in Brussels, would effectively mean the end of what was Project Ukraine, right? That was the last thing that they could get their hands on, was the frozen assets. And they tried. And they're still trying to get the frozen assets. but it's not looking very good. I believe they're going to make some big announcements on December, I want to say either December 8th or December 14th, connected to the Russian frozen assets and trying to seize those Russian frozen assets. But Ursula and co, they got some bad news from Christine Lagarde. Christine Lagarde, she of the ECB, of course. She said that the ECB is not going to backstop the seizure of the Russian frozen assets. The ECB refuses to provide a backstop for 140 billion euros Ukraine loan. We also got the news out of, well, connected to Belgium, trying to pressure Belgium to hand over the Russian frozen assets. And Belgium said, okay, we'll hand over the Russian frozen assets at Euroclear, but what we want is a guarantee from each member state, a full 140 billion available immediately guarantee for every single European Union member state. If you give us that, then we'll green light the Russian frozen assets from Euroclear to go to the Green Goblin. And we got the news coming out today, which says that many of the countries in the European Union are rejecting what they call a blank check guarantee to Belgium over Russian assets loan. I like how they keep on calling it a loan. What a great loan that is, huh? Using other people's money and other people's assets to get a loan. It's a great loan, right? I want to buy a house. Just put it on George's tab over there. Use George's house as collateral to give me a loan so I can purchase my house. It's great. I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah, so EU countries, they're saying no way. No way are we going to provide an immediately available 140 billion euro guarantee to Belgium. We're not going to do it. And so this is causing a big headache for Ursula von der Pirate and for stunning and brave Kaya Kallas. For many member states, it's politically difficult to give this blank check, said a second EU diplomat. They cautioned, however, that it is unlikely that those safety nets will ever be used because the EU's scheme is legally safe. So that's what one diplomat told Politico. So if this scheme of stealing Russia's frozen assets, I'm sorry, did I say steal? Seizing Russia's frozen assets. If this is legally safe, then what's the problem? EU member states agree to Belgium's terms. But they know that it's not legally safe. And they know that if they did this, there would be all kinds of lawsuits from the Russian Federation, and every single EU member country would be on the hook, and they would be paying a ton of money to Russia in the form of damages and legal fees and all kinds of bad stuff happening to EU member states if they actually went along with this scheme. What they want is they want the money, but they want Belgium to be responsible and accountable and on the hook for everything. That's what they want. Give us the money, but Belgium, the economy of Belgium, Euroclear, you're on the hook. Bad deal for Belgium. It would be a great deal for Ursula and Zelensky and for the leaders of the EU member states. It would be a great deal for all of them. Very, very bad deal for Belgium. So good on Belgium. Good on Belgium for saying, nope, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen unless you give us big time guarantees. Speaking of guarantees, we are getting reports which claim that one thing Witkoff is going to offer to Russian President Vladimir Putin when he meets with him is a scheme to make it so that Ukraine does not have to remove the NATO clause enshrined in their constitution, and to tell Russia that they're going to deal with the NATO issue from the side of NATO itself, from the side of the NATO alliance. So basically, Witkoff, according to some reports, is going to tell Putin, we're not getting anywhere with the whole NATO issue with Ukraine. They refuse to remove it from their constitution because it's enshrined in their constitution, and we cannot remove anything from the Ukrainian constitution that's enshrined. So what we're going to do, Mr. President of the Russian Federation, what we're going to do is we're going to tell NATO to put a clause in their constitution or in their alliance documents or bylaws or whatever the hell NATO has. And we're going to make it so that Ukraine cannot enter the NATO alliance. That's how they're going to bypass Ukraine's resistance to the whole NATO issue. And that's what Witkoff is going to float by the Russian president. Trust me, bro. Trust me, bro. We're gonna put it in NATO documents, which are going to say that Ukraine never gains entry into the alliance. Trust us. Okay. If NATO puts it in writing, well, then there you go. Where do I sign, Steve? Where do I sign? Oh, man. This is according to CNN, by the way. They're running this story. The meeting that took place between Rubio, Witkoff, Kushner, and Umerov in Florida, just an FYI, that meeting took place at the Shell Bay Club, a golf and racket venue developed by Witkoff in Hallandale Beach. There you go. I was talking about this yesterday, about this room, this very small, cramped, dark room somewhere in Florida. It's at one of Witkoff's developments, one of his venues. So that's just a bit of information there. The European Union is telling Trump, they're signaling to Trump, that if he reaches a deal with Russia, then he cannot pardon Putin for war crimes. If you do come up with a negotiated settlement with the Russian Federation, then they are urging Trump that they cannot excuse the Russian president and the Russian leadership of any war crimes, as if Russia is going to even entertain that type of discussion or talk. But this is what the European Union is urging Trump to do, or to tell Russia as they're negotiating. We're negotiating a peace, but we just got to let you know, Russian President Putin, Lavrov, Maria Zakharova, Medvedev, that as we negotiate this settlement, you're gonna have to go to The Hague to answer to war crimes that Kaya Kallas and Ursula von der Leyen are putting together or have put together, right? Oh boy, you know, it's usually to be accurate about how these things usually run their course, these negotiations for a conflict. It's usually the winning side which actually puts together the tribunals. It's never the losing side. It's not the side that loses or capitulates that organizes the tribunals. No, that's not how it works. So if I was Europe, I would not want to bring up tribunals and war crimes, because Russia is winning this war. Russia has won this war, and Russia is going to set the terms. And usually, it's the side that wins which has the tribunals. Just saying, that's usually historically how this thing goes. But I thought that was an interesting bit of news. Maria Zakharova, she responded to NATO Commander Dragoni, otherwise known as the Dragon. Mr. Dragoni, who's one of NATO's very capable military commanders. He said yesterday that it's time for NATO to think about preemptively striking Russia. A preemptive attack, a preemptive strike on Russia. It could be a cyber attack, it could be a military attack. It could be both, he said, but we have to start thinking preemptively when it comes to conflict with Russia. And he made those comments to the Financial Times. And Maria Zaharova, she replied to Dragoni, his statements about preemptive strikes, and she basically told him to back off. She said that the bloc, NATO, the alliance needs to reconsider the risks of preemptively striking Russia. Calm down, back off, and reconsider what you're saying, Mr. Dragoni. So that is the statement from Zaharova, and I think I covered all the news for today related to Project Ukraine, with the exception of the Clown World segment. So let's now move on to the other big news from yesterday and from today, which is Venezuela and the reports that Trump had a war party meeting in the War Council meeting in the White House in the Oval Office, so that they can discuss the next steps with regards to this regime change operation in Venezuela. And that's what this is. This has nothing to do with narco-terrorists or any of that stuff. This is about regime change in Venezuela. And Trump held a meeting with his war party in the Oval Office. Hegseth, Stephen Miller, Susie Wiles. Who else? Rubio, I believe, was there. His whole inner circle was at this meeting, and they're discussing what comes next for Venezuela, because we are getting information that Trump held the call with Maduro last week, and it was a 15-minute call. And Trump actually told Maduro, you have until Friday. This was last week. Last week, you have until Friday, which made it November, I want to say November 30th was Friday, either the 29th or 30th. And you have until Friday to exit Venezuela. And if you don't exit Venezuela, then we're talking about some sort of a military strike or decapitation strike or some sort of operation against Venezuela, which includes a land operation against Venezuela. This was the 15-minute phone call. The reports are that Maduro, I don't believe this, but this is what the reports are claiming, that Maduro told Trump, okay, I will leave Venezuela, but you have to provide me, my family, as well as 100 other government officials, associates of mine. You have to grant them immunity, amnesty, and let us exit Venezuela without any risk of extradition or prosecution or anything like that. And the reports are that Trump told Maduro no. And that's where we are. And now he's had this meeting in the Oval Office. Trump holds Venezuela Oval Office meeting amid growing questions about his military moves. President Trump and top national security officials huddled at the White House Monday to discuss next steps on Venezuela as the administration faces renewed calls from lawmakers to release more information, particularly about a controversial decision in September to strike a boat in the Caribbean twice, killing remaining survivors in the second blow. A double tap. This is a big problem for Pete Hegseth, for the Department of War, and for the Trump administration. The reports are that they hit a boat, and then you had some passengers on the boat, some of the crew of the boat. They were trying to swim to survive, trying to stay afloat and to survive from the strike. And the reports are that the orders came from the Department of War, from Hegseth to, I believe, the commander is a guy named Bradley, according to Caroline Levitt.
to strike again and to annihilate everybody. And this is a war crime. I mean, I think the whole thing is a war crime, just to put it on record. I think hitting the boat and all of it is just a war crime to begin with. But this double tap strike, when you can see that there are people trying to survive and stay alive, that's an obvious war crime. And now you have the Democrats in Congress. They are pressing the Trump White House for answers to what is going on. The law is clear. Maine Senator Angus King, an independent, told CNN on Monday morning, if the facts are as have been alleged, then there was a second strike specifically to kill the survivors in the water. That's a stone cold war crime. It's also murder. That's a direct quote. You know, the whole Venezuela thing is already going off the rails. And the operation, this regime change military operation, hasn't even started. And it's already going badly for Trump and his administration, for the Department of War. They already have a huge scandal on their hands. And no doubt the Democrats are going to use this scandal to go after Hegseth and to go after Trump if they win in the midterms. So before they've even started this regime change operation in Venezuela, they've already got trouble. Which, if it was me advising Trump, I would tell Trump, Mr. President, don't you see what's happening? Walk away from this, man. Back off. Back off. You already have problems. Don't go any further. It's obvious. Anyway, that is what's going on in Venezuela. You know, the Uniparty, the Democrats, the Republicans, the neocons, they're going to cheer on the military operation in Venezuela, but you better believe it. They're going to use this against Trump after the midterm elections in a big way. And they're going to go after Trump. They're going to go after Hegseth. They're going to go after his entire administration. No doubt about it. Whatever happens in Venezuela from now on, going forward, it's going to be used against Trump. And they're going to use Ukraine as well. They're going to use it all against the Trump administration after the midterms. But if I was advising the president, I would tell the president, just walk away from this thing. You're already starting things off with a huge scandal. So in Bulgaria, we had big protests yesterday in Bulgaria. Right as I left Bulgaria on Sunday, on Monday you had big anti-government protests protesting the corruption in Bulgaria, protesting the economic situation in Bulgaria, inflation, perhaps protesting the coming of the euro, which is going to come into effect on January the 1st. Bulgaria will be using the euro. And so you had a huge protest in Bulgaria. I believe that that Bulgaria is increasing the military budget to send money to NATO. And this has upset a lot of people in Bulgaria because they are going to see their tax money go to NATO and to the MIC, something that is happening across all countries in the European Union and in NATO. They are seeing whatever money their government does have, which is not much. they do not have much money. All of the collective West governments are pretty much swimming in debt. But whatever they can manage to put together, they're either sending it to the Green Goblin or they are sending it to NATO or to the MIC companies. And so you have very, very large protests in Bulgaria. Oh boy, when they adopt the euro, things are going to go from bad to worse, unfortunately. I've lived it in Cyprus. I've lived it in Greece. You think you have troubles now? Economic troubles now?
Just wait until you adopt the euro currency. Everything goes up. Just double everything. Just double the price of everything. You want to know what stays steady? You want to know what doesn't go up? Once you adopt the euro, salaries. Salaries will not go up, but everything else goes up, and it goes up very, very fast. Not to mention that as a country, you lose your sovereignty. If you don't control your currency, then you don't really control your country, your destiny, your sovereignty. That's going to be in the hands of the ECB and in Christine Lagarde's hands. Yeah, I remember when Cyprus and Greece, we started to rebel just a little bit against the austerity that the EU and the ECB and the IMF, that they wanted to impose on Greece and on Cyprus. Just a little bit. We rebelled just a little bit. And that was it. They closed off all the cash to ATMs. No more money for anybody. No one could take out any money, because the money's controlled by Brussels, by Lagarde, right? By Lagarde and Ursula and Stunning and Brave. And that other guy, Costa, who no one talks about. No one mentions Costa, who's the European Council president. Anyway, that is the news out of Bulgaria. And I think we can get into a couple of clown worlds. And let's start things off with a Trump post on Truth Social, where Trump said in a fairly long post on Truth Social, he said that things in Syria are positive. He's happy with the way things are going in Syria ever since the regime change coup that took place. And he's happy with al-Shara. He's very happy with the one-time HTS al-Qaeda Nusra leader al-Shara al-Jalani, who has changed his name to al-Shara. And Trump said in a Truth Social post, he's working hard to improve Syria. I like him. I like him a lot. I like that al-Shara. But Mr. President, he's former al-Qaeda. I still like him. I like him a lot. Oh, boy. It's a clown world. It's an upside-down world is what it is. So we're getting some reports from Ukraine media. Ukrainsky Pravda is reporting that when Yermak was dismissed by Zelensky, forced to resign by the Green Goblin, that there was quite a fight, quite a breakup between Yermak and Zelensky. The reports are, according to Ukraine media, that Yermak was shouting at the Green Goblin for about 30 minutes. It was a 30-minute shout fest. Yermak, very upset with Zelensky, forcing him to resign. Yermak saying that he did nothing wrong. And it was quite an intense breakup. And there was quite a lot of people involved in this breakup. A lot of Zelensky scriptwriters and producers conspired to remove Alibaba. Alibaba. Yeah, you know who was behind all of this? My guess? They don't actually name this person in the Ukraine media reports. But my guess is that Podolyak was behind all of this. This is my chance to share a room in the bunker with Volodymyr. I can remove Yermak and I can be Zelensky's best buddy. It's all Podolyak, I'm telling you. Podolyak sabotaged Yermak. That would be my guess. I want to work out with Volodymyr, not Yermak working out with Volodymyr. Remember the Financial Times report, which talked about how the Green Goblin and Yermak
They work out in the morning and they share a bunker and they play video games together. Podolyak got very jealous. Anyway, sticking with Yermak, we had a post on X, which had Yermak in his military fatigues, in his outfit, ready to go to the front lines. And this post says, this is crazy. This post says, when he said it, he did it. Andrei Yermak is already at the front. And there you can see Yermak ready to do battle. Unfortunately, this image was AI generated. And there's a community note stating that this image was AI generated. Yermak is not going to the front lines. That I can assure you. Even though we are getting credible reports which claim that the Green Goblin, after he had his fight with Yermak, has barred Yermak from leaving Ukraine until the investigation against him wraps up. So we are getting those reports. I don't know if this is true. Personally, I think that Yermak will find a way to get out of Ukraine, but the reports claim that he has been barred from leaving the country. Anyway, that is the news for today. I will wrap it up by saying, like this video, share this channel, subscribe to this channel. I forgot to mention it in the beginning, so I will mention it now. And look for me on X, on Telegram, and also on Rumble. Go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merch. I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.